Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today, 941-877-1552, or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. In the spring of 1970, Bobby Berge got a call from legendary guitarist Tommy Bolin in Boulder. And he said he wanted him to come out and audition with his band Zephyr. Bobby had been listening to their first album and absolutely loved Tommy's playing and the sound of the group. After flying out and hitting it off with the group with an initial audition, he immediately moved out to Boulder. He played with Zephyr for the next year or so, and it was an extremely exciting experience. Boulder was a thriving musical mecca at the time, and they would play in and around Boulder at small outdoor mini Woodstock types of concerts. They played in Denver at Mammoth Gardens along with Joe Cocker and Leon Russell. For a good year, they flew to many major cities and played a huge concerts on the same bill as musical greats like Stevie Winwood, Mountain, Fleetwood Mac, The Kinks, and Iggy Pop, to name a few. In the fall of 1970, he played drums on the second Zephyr album, going back to Colorado at Electric Lady Studios in New York City with the great Eddie Kramer as engineer. This was Bobby's first major experience playing with Tommy Bolin, and it was fantastic, to say the least. Bobby says Tommy was always outgoing, upbeat, friendly, and extremely funny. He was so much fun for a drummer to play with. I love to play off him and copy his lightning-fast riffs as we jammed. I learned a lot about weird time signatures from him. I miss those hippie days and miss Tommy and playing with one of the greatest. On Bobby's work with the great Buddy Miles, Buddy's a very talented, soulful man. During 1975-76, I did more work with him than with Tommy Bolin. I was switching back and forth with projects, mainly recording. I did the More Miles Per Gallon album with Buddy in 1975 and Bicentennial, a gathering of the tribes in 1976. When we played live, Buddy would play drums for a few tunes. Then I'd hop on skins and Buddy would go out front and sing. We had a five-piece horn section, a funky bass player, and keyboards. It was wild playing with both artists during that period of 75 through 76. I'll put up some Buddy stuff sometime, kind of a disco feel, but very funky. Please welcome legendary drummer Bobby Berge to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Bobby.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you, man. You got quite a resume.
Yeah, you about said it all there, I guess. There isn't much more to say. Well, no, that you covered a lot of ground there, but
what,
yeah, you touched on some major deals there. I did know Tommy, you know, before that,
right,
before he called me. You know, I met him in Sioux City, like, around 65, 66. He was only, like, 14, 15.
Wow.
And I was 17, playing with the club band of Valairs in Sioux City. So that's when I first hooked up with him.
Well, I tell you one thing. Tommy had so many friends and so many people that are still very, very attached to him today.
Yes, that's true. I mean, well, his music is timeless, you know, as we all, a lot of people can agree. Touches so many
I was lucky enough to see him with the James Gang and with Deep Purple both, and had good seats for those, so I got to see him up close. But yeah, he was a fantastic guitar player, and you know, I love this fusion stuff especially.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it blew me away. Well, he blew me away when I first heard the first Zephyr album, like you were saying. But, you know, I knew he was a good player even before that. I mean, he was kind of like a little above all the others. And there's a lot of good guitar players in Sioux City that he grew up with. But he was just kind of a little above them. And, you know, I used to jam the Hendrix and Cream stuff with him, and he just had that sound. I mean, the heavy rock sound. So, yeah, I always knew he was special, you know.
There was always that one, you know, I grew up hanging around a lot of musicians in high school, and I played a little guitar, but there's always that one guy. You knew he, you know, he was something special about him. He just picked up the guitar and could play anything, you know. And he had his own personality on the guitar, you know.
Right.
There's always that one guy.
Well, in between Zephyr and the L.A. Buddy Miles, and then Tommy again, it was a big era there for a couple of years. Energy, super group.
Great band. I agree.
That was, I would say, you know, we didn't, you know, hit the big time as you say, but we did some good concerts and did some great demo recordings. But as far as the band, that was pretty much musically the high point. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, we were playing, it's like, you know, Jeff Cook has said, you know, we were a blues, hard rock, metal, country. I mean, we just touched on all bases.
Tommy Baldwin and Energy, I guess you guys formed around 1971, right, in Boulder?
Yeah. Right after Tommy and I left Zephyr.
The lineup was Tommy Baldwin, Jeff Cook, Tom Stevenson, Stanley Sheldon, which I know, I met him backstage at a Peter Frampton show and did an interview, and then you on drums. It was a great lineup.
Well, see, did you see us back then, or?
No, I actually saw Peter Frampton with Stanley. You know, Stanley went yeah, and he's a good guy too, Stanley Sheldon.
Our first singer was Gary Wilson.
Okay.
He's the singer on Red Skies and background on Limits.
Right.
And then, let's see, we had Bobby LeKind on Congas for a while. We called him Bobby Conga. Then he went on to play with the Doobies, you know.
Right.
Yeah, then Jeff Cook, and then Max Carl.
Now, did Kenny Passarelli play in the band for a while?
Well, the sort of like pre-Energy was, okay, when Tommy and I left Zephyr, yeah, there was a little period there where he had already hooked up with Jeremy Steig, I guess by phone, or I'm not sure if he went out there yet, but anyway, Jeremy came back for a few weeks.
Right.
And then Kenny was on bass then. And we did a few gigs, Tulagi's, a few places in Denver.
What happened? What happened to the band? Why didn't the band, you know, keep on going?
Good question. we were kind of over a lot of people's heads. I mean, it got out there at times.
Right.
You heard some of the tapes, right?
Yeah.
We did have, you know, a one big chance there. We were playing a place called The Soundtrack on Colfax. And, you know, it's a famous story where some record Mm-hmm. And we were like partying backstage, and then when the second set, we thought they left, and then we were kind of a little loose, a little high, drunk, whatever. And then we didn't know they stuck around, and we kind of blew it the second set.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know how much that had to do with it, but maybe something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's one for the $64,000 question. You know, why, you know, Barry couldn't do more, or just not sure, but we sure hell should have gotten signed.
I think so.
That band was great.
It was a fantastic band. Yeah, I loved your rendition of Going Down. I saw that on YouTube. I think it's better than Jeff Beck's.
Well, yeah, that's well, the way when I hear that, it's like kind of just slow and metalish.
Right.
You know,
right.
That radio broadcast at Summit Studios.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, that's the way we played all the time. We were pretty consistent. I mean, when I hear like different recordings, like different live versions, even like Hokahei, it's like we kept a lot of the arrangements stayed somewhat the same. But you know, we would definitely get into our improv. You know, besides the basic arrangement, but it was just a great band, and we were all in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Tommy and I hit it off in the respect where, you know, he had a lot of drummer in him. I mean, he played percussive type stuff on his guitar, you know, that fast 32nd, 64th note runs, and I don't know, we just I sort of like copied him, along with him, mm-hmm. however you want to look at it.
Right.
But, yeah, he once told me we thought alike.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think he meant in that percussive way. Because that was kind of my style. I mean, like coming from a rudiment drum corps background, just kind of that straight ahead, rudimental approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I, in the latter years here, I sort of like try and almost get away from that, because I mean that style, I mean, it's just kind of tight, and I don't know how to describe it exactly. What do you think?
Well, I think you are a great drummer, by the way.
I mean, it's different, like, you know, compare it to different drummers where they have a more relaxed...
Right.
We're comparing it to, like, Robbie Chamberlain.
Right.
So he's more of a jazzy, finesseful drummer, mm-hmm. and I was just, like, more straight-ahead rock.
Yep.
Coming from rudiments and drum corps.
Yep, exactly.
Band and orchestra.
Yeah, yep. Were you a big fan of Buddy Rich?
One of my first records, well, that's where I, like, you know, Tommy, when he was very young, he was listening to a lot of, well, back then it was swing jazz, uh-huh. bebop, and so he started real young that with that, and myself also, besides rock, one of my first records was Take Five by Brubeck, so I really got into Joe Morello.
Yeah.
And then when I heard Buddy Rich, somehow I acquired, let me see, I was about 14, 15, I acquired a 45.
Mm-hmm.
It was Woody Herman, Woody Herman's Herd.
Yep.
Woody Herman in the Herd.
Yeah, I remember.
With Buddy Rich on drums, it's called Hi-Fi Drums. If you look that up on YouTube, I mean, Buddy plays, I mean, it's incredible. But when I heard that, how clean, he was so fast and so clean and musical. Both him and Morello were very musical. So, Buddy Rich, Joe Morello, Earl Palmer. I got that record Drumsville when I was real young. And then Sandy Nelson, kind of in the rock. I mean, back then, I mean, now, you know, Sandy was it's kind of a big deal.
Yep.
And he was a real clean drummer, too. You know, it was simple, you know, let there be drums, you know, the 16th notes on the toms.
Right.
But he was a big influence, too. So.
And there was one more guy before Buddy Rich that, you know, made his mark, Gene Krupa.
Well, Gene Krupa, you know, I liked him too.
Yep.
But I liked them all. I listened to Max Roach, Gene Krupa. Let's see. Well, but for some reason, Buddy's style, that cleanness.
Yeah.
Because I think he must have started with Rudiments too, and. Well, I think they all did.
Right.
But his snare didn't ring out as much.
Right.
You know, like Krupa really had the ringy snare, and it kind of drove me crazy at times. But, you know, it's just different styles. But Buddy was, I mean, way above the rest as far as I was concerned. And then Morello.
Right.
Wow. The time signatures, and that's where I first started, you know, learning about 5/4 and 7/4, 9/8.
Yep. And
Hello. And
Tommy was lucky enough also to play with one of my favorite drummers, Billy Cobham.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many great drummers, but yeah, he. We started meeting some of the. He just started making a name for himself in the jazz field there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they loved his playing. And, of course, he loved their playing.
Right.
But, yeah, Cobham. Did see him live in Boulder once.
Mm-hmm.
A couple times. Saw him with Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Yep.
In Boulder, and another time later. Later on in Boulder. That wasn't Mahavishnu, it was the second time, but yeah, just incredible. I mean, there's so many great drummers like Lenny White, Mason.
Yeah.
But one of my favorites, can't leave out Tony Williams.
Tony Williams, right.
Yeah. He's like, he's probably about top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nowadays, I mean, in the jazz field, you know, Tony Williams, John Bonham in the rock field. But I mean, there's so many great ones that, you know. And then on a different note, Buddy Miles was a great drummer.
Oh yeah,
with the hard rock funk. I mean, he was just. And just lay it down simple and solid and funky.
Yeah, he was great with Hendrix too, you know. I mean, he had his big hit, of course, Them Changes, which I love. It's got that's probably one of the great riffs of all time, you know. Da 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 da. I love that.
Well, right. Well, we were, you know, I grew up with, partly grew up with him. I mean, we went to, you know, I thought we went to junior high together, but I kind of learned. I went to Whittier, and I think he went to Axtell Park in Sioux Falls. But anyway, we still hung out a lot. We used to go bowling and get together and jam.
That's pretty cool.
Because his family lived in Sioux Falls for a little while.
Right.
And then they went to Omaha. But yeah, we were buddies. And so then he moved away. And, hell, the next thing I know, I hear he's, you know, I hear about, I think it was 69-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about, Buddy Miles Express. So
yep.
I bought that album, Buddy Miles Express, Right to Your Skull. And I love some of the
Yeah.
I just, that was one of the ones I would jam to. But yeah, I get, before that, of course, I, you know, as soon as I heard Hendrix and Cream, I mean, man, I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, then Buddy, after Expressway to Your Skull, next thing I know, I hear he's with, you know, Electric Flag.
Yeah, that's right.
And I love that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, definitely heavy funk.
How'd you hook up back with Buddy? Did he give you a call one day and want you to play on his album?
Okay, so after the, oh boy, a lot happened. Okay, after Energy, you know, right. Tommy had to hooked up with Jeremy, went out and did those sessions with, right. the, you know, Cobham.
Mm-hmm.
Demos, you know.
Yep.
Jeremy, Cobham, let's see. Okay, then Tommy got with James Gang.
Yep.
And did that trip. Got a little, started getting bored of that. He'd come back to Boulder and we'd throw together Tommy, well, kind of a post energy deal with mm-hmm. Tommy Boland and friends. And so then he's out in LA. Well, then he calls me January 1st of 75.
Right.
Of all days. And said, hey, do you want to come on out and push you to play in my new band? Because he hadn't really had a Tommy Boland band yet.
Right.
Yeah, so I moved out there, packed up my stuff in my 64 Rambler, and headed out there. And so that, you know, we attempted a band. It was Tommy Stanley and me and Ronnie Barron.
Right.
He's
right.
Dr. John's keyboard player, you know.
Sure.
And it didn't really fly. And so then we're getting into the spring of 75. Stanley hooked up with Frampton.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy hooked up with Purple. And we're just, you know, there's a lot of hanging out in the clubs and stuff. So I remember going to a club with Tommy, and Buddy was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't seen him in, I mean, a long time.
Yeah.
I guess since Sioux Falls.
Wow.
So I go over and, hey, Buddy, oh, Bobby, you know. And, I mean, it was great to see him. So I start talking to him at that club there, and I think he, let me see. I said, I'm working on some demos. You know, you ought to come by the house. And I'd like you to, well, let's play, you know. So went to one of his, well, the house that he was at the time. That might have been the one in Nichols Canyon.
Right.
Because we did one of the songs was basically a jam.
Mm-hmm.
It's on More Miles Per Gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Nichols Canyon Funk. So he had Ben Schultz on guitar at the time, and we just started jamming around, and he said, yeah, I'd like you to play on my album. And so that's how that started.
Buddy was a pretty good guitar player, too, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't hear him play a whole lot of guitar at the time.
Uh-huh.
But once in a while, I did. I mean, blues rock, you know, psychedelic, whatever.
Yeah.
But he came back. 2000 was the last time I saw Buddy.
Really?
He came back and headlined the Boland Fest. It was at the Anderson Pavilion. And
uh-huh.
Glenn Hughes played too, so I don't know if Glenn was a headliner or a Buddy, but he played a lot of guitar that day. I remember I sat in a couple songs with his band and got some pics of that day, but that's the last time I saw him, and that's sad. So many, of our friends.
Yep.
Gone.
It is sad. I've got a I've got a new book out called The Rockstar Chronicles, and I interviewed like 50 guys, you know, not that long ago. I mean, recently and within the last 5 years, and 9 of them are gone in the book. 9 of them have passed away. It's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's what makes you want to treasure every day.
Yeah, exactly.
One day at a time, and yep. Make the best of each day. The
Tommy Bolin Band had several different lineups. I mean, you were in it with Mark Stein, who I had on the show also, another great guy. And I had Reggie on recently, Reggie McBride. But you were on, which one were you on? You were with Tommy, Mark, Norma Jean Bell, and Reggie, right? That was a lineup?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, the first main Tommy Bolin Band was the people you said, yeah, in Nevada,
right.
Walden, sorry. Nerda.
Yeah, that's okay. A hard name to pronounce.
Yeah, well, anyway, so that was the first band, and then Michael left the band, and then I took his place.
Right.
So yeah. So it was a great band, great players.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose musically, you know, besides energy, that was definitely another high point. I mean, it was great playing on, you know, a couple songs on Teaser.
Mm-hmm.
I did do the grind.
Yep.
I screwed up.
I saw that.
I screwed up.
I saw that.
You know, in Lotus.
Yeah.
But Private Eyes, I mean, that was more... less jamming around. Well, actually, you know, we worked a lot of that up in the studio, so I mean, it did. I mean, we kind of, I guess, jammed and improvised some of it into actual songs.
Mm-hmm.
But the end product is more like a band and in great tunes. You know, or as Teaser, a lot of guest artists and a lot going on. But so Private Eyes, I mean, it sounded great. Definitely a high point. I love the sound that Dennis McKay got on the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And got out everything. But so anyway, yeah, great players. I mean, Reggie.
Yeah.
I mean, monster bass player.
He's awesome.
There's
yeah.
Mark and Norma and Tommy.
Yeah.
That was, I would say, especially the second part of Post Toasty, it kind of captured what I always wanted to hear myself, you know, really rocking out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with Reggie background, I mean, along with playing with him and Mark, I mean, and Tommy, I mean, man, that kicked butt.
That's an all-star lineup, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's hard.
Vanilla Fudge and you know, Reggie played with not only Rare Earth, but Stevie Wonder and Elton John. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah, Mo, I did see him at the Sioux Falls Jazz Fest 2009.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to him a bunch, and that was the last time I think I talked to Reggie on
really?
The phone about shortly, yeah, around 2003, 2004.
I just talked to him, like, last week.
Oh, wow.
He's a great interview, man. I mean, he's got some great stories.
Yeah. Rich, a lot of those guys have got better memories. And,
I think you're doing pretty darn good.
Well, I'm giving it my best shot.
I think you're doing great. I want to read something you said about when you were working with the Teaser album and Private Eyes. Those sessions, I guess it was in L.A., at a record plant in L.A., And right. you were saying that it was incredible. The place was fantastic, that you had, you saw more stars than Carter's got little liver pills. I like that.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, at the time, it's like, you know, you're kind of shy, and it's like, you don't know what to say, really, but, you know, I mean, but, yeah, I mean, there's, I mean, one time, let me see, who was Bad Company was,
yep.
I mean, in C, I don't know, Robert Plant was in the control room.
Wow.
And he had his leg in the cast.
Huh.
And so, like, he could just sit in the control room, and because he was playing some guitar, and Boz was on bass,
mm-hmm.
and Mick Ralph was there. And they were just started jamming around, and there were some drums out in the studio, but there's no sticks.
Right.
So, I don't know where the brushes came from, but I turned the brushes around so I could get the hard part,
uh-huh.
you know. Just start jamming some stuff with them. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like a who's who of, I mean, many, many people recording there.
Incredible.
At the same time.
Yeah, you said you hung out with Bad Company.
Played on, because uh-huh. I was recording with both Buddy and Tommy there.
Right.
Like Stevie Wonder played yep. clavichord on one or two of Buddy's songs on More Miles Per Gallon. But so, like, you know, I had this game room in between.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of spread out, you know, the record plant. B was in the middle, and C was down a little hall off to one chute. But they had the game room where, I mean, they go through there, and there's Stevie Wonder and Buddy Miles playing foosball. Or maybe it was a shooting pool. I don't know. No, that's foosball.
Foosball.
And I think C was kicking his butt.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of people. And I used to, I don't know, I get a little buzz on it. I just pop my head into different studios.
Right, why not?
Let me see. The guitar player for the record, let me see, the record company, studio musician, so I can't think of his name.
Mm-hmm.
Played with Carly Simon, and anyway, I just stick my head into different studios and kind of made a pest of myself.
Didn't you get to play on a couple of tracks for Carly Simon?
Yeah, I did, but I don't think she used.
She didn't use it.
I don't think she used both of them.
Uh-huh.
David played on a bunch of them, and Tommy, I guess, played on a couple.
Right.
I did a rock one, and I don't, you know, I don't know what the reasoning was. I didn't get into that, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think they used, like, the real rocker one, the My Track, but I played on another one, because I think I looked it up, and I did some research, and I found that. But it's like a little, kind of a little country, little shuffle dealy, and I was playing on the rims of the drums.
Right.
Like, clickety, click, 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 you know. I mean, it was kind of, just kind of a hokey little. So I think they kept that one. Because, that's been a while. But I looked it up. I think I found it.
Huh.
So anyway, that was a trip too. You know, living in the village there, staying at the Chelsea for
right.
I don't know, what was it, a good month?
Hmm.
And going back to Colorado recording. And, man, saw a lot of greats then. Tommy and John Ferris and myself, we'd go to a lot of clubs.
Right.
See, like, Roland Kirk, Charlie Mingus, different times.
Yeah.
Mose Allison.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we saw Lenny Bruce one night.
Huh.
Flip Wilson. All kinds of people. Of course, you can see a lot of people in the village. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, you said while you were working with Tommy, you would run down the hallway and work with Buddy.
Yeah. Because there was a time when we were both at the same time when Tommy was in Studio A and Buddy was in B.
Mm-hmm.
B was a little smaller studio, but yep, it was pretty crazy. And then later on, Tommy was moved down to B.
Mm-hmm. Did you play with get to play with Jeff Beck at all?
Just when he popped into town, I think he was playing the Starlight Ballroom.
Right.
Or Starlight Bowl, whatever. And that was like the first part of June, 76. Mm-hmm. And, our good friend, Philip Palomini, where we used to jam all the time and do little demo recordings. I guess Tommy ran into him and found out he was coming into town and somehow got a hold of him and invited him over to Phillips.
Right.
So, yeah, that was, I wish I remembered more of that, but I mean, at least the recordings are of
exactly
Jeff on bass. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, when Jeff was on guitar and Tommy on bass, got erased.
Huh.
Because that was the first jam.
Right.
I mean, we jammed a half hour, 45 minutes that way first. And then Philip did a lot of, it wasn't a fancy setup, but a lot of it was the reel-to-reel. I don't know if it was Sony or TAC.
Mm-hmm.
And just a two or four track. But that particular time he was recording on a cassette recorder, and he flipped the cassette over in between the jams.
Really?
And, he didn't flip it over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. He forgot to flip the cassette over.
And it ran out.
And then he recorded over the first jam.
Oh, okay.
So now we have, Tommy and I definitely played every lick we knew.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I hope Jeff enjoyed that. I gave 2010, John Hurt has made some copies of,
right.
Of those jams, and so I had a copy and even made a cover, for it. So I took it, went down to Kansas City with Jesse Christian, guitar player that I play with a lot around here. We went down to this, because he was playing the Starlight Amphitheater there in Kansas City. 2010, and then we got to go backstage. So I said, "Hey Jeff, we talked to him and did some pictures," and I said, "We gave him T-shirts." I said, "Hey Jeff, here's a copy of my new CD, and you're on it."
Right.
I don't know what I said, but here's that jam we did, probably gets the hundreds of CDs people giving him and whatnot.
Right.
But I think his gal took it, right? His manager took it. But anyway, so okay, But yeah.
There is one jam with you, Tommy, and Jeff Beck on YouTube that I found.
Well,
yeah,
right, and that's it.
That's it.
That's that.
Yeah.
The first part of June 76.
Right.
Okay, there's part one and there's part two.
Okay.
Well, that's our jam.
Okay.
No, there's part three. That's not Tommy and Jeff and me. That's Jeff doing his live recording somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, live gig.
Huh.
But that's our jam split into two sections in part one and part two.
Got it. What was your impression of Barry Fay?
Well, you know, I didn't really get to real personal.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to know a lot of people. Like, you know, I was pretty much a loner. And then, or like, you know, I was married for a while or whatever. I just kind of was in my own little world.
Right.
But I didn't get to know him personally that well. But, you know, we got along.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he loved Tommy. And he really, he loved, what we were doing in the energy. And he tried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did what he could. As far as, you know, trying to get us going, get us signed. But he mainly loved Tommy. And, he did. I got along with him good.
Mm-hmm.
I hit it off. He did buy me the Mapex set. You know, I did really appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
No, I mean the blonde Wood Ludwigs.
Right.
Double bass. and that's what you hear, like, okay, on the Summit Studio.
Mm-hmm.
The live recording. That's those big drums. I actually like, for some reason, the smaller the set that I played in Zephyr.
Right.
It was a Ludwig Marine Pearl, 220-inch bass, and just an 12 and a 13 rack and a 16 floor.
Mm-hmm.
220-inch bass. And that's what I used in the energy for a lot of the demos. And I love the sound of those.
Yeah.
Where they came across in the recordings. But anyway, at some point in energy, we decided, all of us were somehow getting new equipment, and so I think it was brought to my attention, hey, Bobby, what do you need? You know?
Yeah.
We went to a music store in Denver, and Gary said, pick out what you need. So that's what I ended up with.
Is it difficult getting that right sound in a drum set? I mean, to me, a guitar would be a lot easier than a drum set. You're getting the sound you're looking for. Is that?
Well, I didn't nitpick too much.
No?
I mean, I just sort of went with what I had.
Right.
It's kind of like after the fact, where I noticed, it just kind of depends on the situation you're in, who's,
mm-hmm.
what studio you're in, who's the engineer, who's, you know, but, the Ludwigs was easier to, they're smaller drums,
mm-hmm.
and they're easier to control the ringing of the drums.
Right.
But, you know, Mm-hmm. I just go with what I have and play.
Yeah.
Yes.
I noticed, like, artists like, you know, Whitney Houston, I mean, she would bring in, for every track, maybe, like, a different drummer, you know?
Well, that's nice when you can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can afford something like that.
Yeah, well,
you know all the different people. I mean, that's kind of like, sounds like what Tommy did on Teaser.
Right.
You know, every... had a lot of guest artists on that, and it was exciting, great, a lot of great players on there.
What about Bill Ryan and Black Irish? What was that all about?
Well, that was a great band, and you know, Billy was probably the next best, well, the best, but as far as getting that the heavy rock sound.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, like, I would say next in line after Tommy.
Yep. I listened to his stuff.
He loved
great.
Tommy.
Yeah.
And, but he got the, I don't know, he just got, I mean, he played different
sometimes,
but he got that sound.
Yeah.
That huge, huge rock metal sound at times.
Right.
He could be real melodic. Sometimes he'd go off in a more dissonant, you know, melodies and leads. But I've also heard him play some really pretty, well, I call them minor melodic lead lines. That's what I loved about Tommy. Mm-hmm. He was so musical, and he had such a beautiful mind, the way he, some of his melodies. And I also love the way he used spaces. I mean, he didn't always play, he didn't always go crazy all the time. He knew what to, when to lay back.
Right.
He was really a groove orientated player.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of jams back in Energy, Zephyr, and later in L.A. where, and he just, we'd lock into a groove and he would just keep the, if it was a folk groove or a rock groove, he'd just hang right on that.
Yeah.
He wasn't worried about the leads, and then, you know, when he wanted to go off on a tangent, he would, but yeah, Billy was great. Didn't always, it was a little harder to work with, but not that I was always the easiest, but he could be a slave driver at times.
Really?
But yeah, we'd get us rehearsing until, you know, 3-4 in the morning. I mean, we'd have some endless rehearsals, but that band, Black Irish, some more great players, Jim Ayers on keys, and Buddy Brooks on bass, another killer bass player.
Yeah.
It was a great band.
What happened to Billy?
Billy passed away in 99. Heart attack.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah, another sad deal.
Yeah.
But did some great demos with them.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are used on Billy's album. I think he only released one album. Joker's Eye and Generic.
Mm-hmm.
He put on that album their demos that we did, and I think we did them, well, one was in Denver and one was in Boulder, North Star Studio. Butch Trucks helped produce that, some of those demos for that album.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got some good stuff on YouTube. I've been listening to it, and I really like it. You know? I didn't know too much about Bill Ryan before, you know, we were doing this interview.
Well, I hope we don't let him. I'd like to thought of doing, you know, a tribute concert once in a while for him.
That'd
but
be great.
Nobody's ever talked about that much.
Yeah.
Jim and Scotty Rivera, they had a Black Irish going there for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of disbanded here. In the last several years, but they had it going for a while. But yeah, I would love to do a Billy Ryan tribute concert, keep his memory alive. But yeah, I mean, he was great.
Yeah, well, count me in. You know, if you get some guys, yeah, count if you got a couple of guys that and you guys want to talk about it, we'll definitely. Put it on the radio, you know.
Well, I'll bring that up again with Jim.
Yeah. We'll do a tribute.
And for sure he'd be into it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just hard. It's hard to get things going and round everybody up and, you know, all the logistics and everything. It's
not easy
these days.
Yeah. Well, thanks to Trace Keane, I've got enough to do my next... series. My book is going to be in four series. In the next series, I'm going to devote a whole chapter to Tommy, and because I've got some great, you know, artists that are talking about Tommy. I got you, I got Kenny Passarelli, I got Joe Vitale, Johnny Boland, Stanley Sheldon, Reggie McBride, Dennis McKay, Mike Finnegan, Russell Bizette, Eddie Turner, Jock Bartley and Mark Stein. I think that would be a good chapter. What do you think?
Oh my God, that's fantastic!
Thanks to Trace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trace has done so much.
He has.
I owe him a lot. All this.
Yeah. Well, we'll do the same for Billy Ryan. How's that? We'll do some kind of tribute to Billy because he
sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, guys like that need to be remembered. You know, they had so much talent. It's a shame.
Well, we got him on the video on that on the very first Bluebird concert.
Right.
You know, January. Let me see, January 23rd, 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's 2 days later, the very first Tommy Bolin Archives Volume 1 came out on Rhino Records.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was Johnny Boland had done some, you know, mm-hmm. some regional, I mean, some Sioux City area tribute deals. But that was like the very first major one.
Right.
That was really exciting because we hadn't seen each other. Stanley and Tom Stevenson, mm-hmm. we hadn't seen each other in 15, 20 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. A lot of excitement in the air that night.
You and Johnny are pretty close, huh?
Well, we're buds, you know, we're family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, throughout, since the early days, the heyday, we've, especially in the last, I would say, you know, 20, 25 years, you mm-hmm. know, we've become pretty close.
I tell you guys are all good guys, man. You know, every one of you.
You know, shout out to John Bartle here. You know, a lot of the great, mm-hmm. great players that grew up with Tommy. I mean, you know, Roger Rothwell is gone. Gary Gunderson's gone. And, bass player George Larvik. But, John Bartle mm-hmm. was probably one of my favorite guitar players around. He grew up with Tommy, so he's got that influence. I think they influenced each other, but he can play good and great blues singer too.
Yeah. What happened? What about
still a lot of great players around here?
Oh yeah.
But
They're just not getting the exposure that they once had, you know, and that's why I like to do what I'm doing.
Right.
What about Bobby Berge and the Blues Bashers? What happened there?
Well, it kind of ran its course. That's Jesse, Kristen, and myself. We weren't playing quite a bit there. Let me see, 2007 to 2009, 10. We were playing a lot. It was kind of I had already had a jam band. It was the Blues Bastards for a while.
Huh.
But I had about six, seven, eight different versions of that. And then Jesse and I hooked up.
Right.
And then we played steady for a few years. And, you know, I still throw something together now and then. In fact, I'm kind of trying to get something going again. But it's hard. Everybody's leaving. Sad to say, that's, you know, but.
Yeah.
There's still some great players, and, you know, I kind of go in phases. I mean, you know, spurts. I don't play for a while, and then I'll get a string of things where I throw some things together. Kind of working on a thing with John Bartle where we're going to host a blues jam in Sioux Falls.
Oh, great.
Now and then. Ooh. Yeah, at the Vanguard Arts.
Right.
And who knows, Jesse and I might throw something together now and then. But, well, a major thing that just happened, it was a lot of fun, exciting, was the induction.
Yes.
Can't forget to mention that.
And, right.
Because, you know, I don't play that much anymore. So, I mean, December 3rd, that was, that was awesome. I mean, it's hard to believe that it actually happened, jamming with Joe Bonamassa and Warren Hayes.
That's incredible.
I mean, that was great, though. I mean, thanks to Chuck Morris and Zephyr getting inducted and Tommy. I mean,
yeah.
It was a great show. And, but, man, it was so like wham, bam, you know, just a few days and it's over.
I know.
It was great.
Do you, would you like to do some more session work at all, or?
Well, sure. If the situation is right.
Right.
You know, the details seem to work out, and yeah, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
I'm actually doing some, I'm helping an old buddy at school, my old best friend from way, way back, Barry Hansen, and he lives in Texas. He's a Christian, and he writes a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing, some drum tracks for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, okay, a couple were done in, a drummer friend's house in Sioux Falls, Carl Holloman. And now I'm in Sioux City, and he wants me to do a couple more tracks. And, all I have is a Zoom 4-track, so I might attempt something or may have to go to a friend's. But, yeah, I'm up for different things.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys now doing drum clinics, too. I know... Buddy, Billy Cobham does that, and Carol Kay does things online from the Wrecking Crew. A lot of them are doing, you know, clinics online now, you know, like by Skype.
I know. I'm learning a lot. I mean, I'm you can learn from the greats on YouTube.
Pretty
cool. There's so much on the internet now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been watching a lot of Weckl and Gad, a bunch of different guys lately, and they're just doing amazing stuff these days. I mean, it's just like it's a lot of it's over my head, but you know, you just learn a little at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the different time things and off the wall fills. Yeah, I used to teach. I mean, back when I actually went to the store and taught, and it's been a long time, but I taught for a year and a half in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I did give some private lessons, but, you know, I'd like to get back into it.
Yeah.
It's something I got to work on. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you got so much to offer, you know, and, you know, you could teach the next greatest drummer. Who knows?
Well, I would probably have to take some, maybe be geared for beginners, intermediate, and just, you know, I know drummers don't want to dwell on rudiments and the boring stuff too much.
I know.
You need that basic...
True.
Yeah, you need that basic background. So, I would be good in that respect as far as getting, you know, somebody started right.
Yeah.
But man, it's like there's so much that they can learn on the internet. But yeah, I'm going to look into that. And
there's nothing like
teaching again.
Yeah, there's nothing like a private lesson, you know? I mean, I was even thinking about doing the Carol Kay thing. I mean, I did take lessons, guitar lessons, but then I got into a different realm and they wanted to teach me theory and all this crap. And I lost it after that. I said, I don't want to get that complicated. It's too much like math.
Well, right. I got to keep that in mind. Like if I was to teach, I would probably say, well, if they want to play rock or jazz or hip hop or what, say, okay, let's do that. I mean, I want to help you do that, achieve your goal. But you got to have some basic background.
Exactly. Yeah, do the background, and then I'll teach you how to be bottom.
Well, I don't know about that.
But Bobby, here's your final question, and I ask a lot of artists this question and get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform with or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
If I had a dream, who I would want to play with.
Yeah, if you had a wish, you know, it could be anyone, somebody that's passed on or, you know.
Well, hopefully it'd be somebody that's still living. But, well, let's see. Oh, off the top of my head, I would love to do a session or somehow play with Reggie again.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. I mean,
that would be fun.
Yes.
You know any backers with a whole lot of money?
I could find you one.
Well, we'll see what.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I mean, all these guys are still around, you know, and they're the best of the best. You know,
our top, Emmanuel Tommy, the main one at the, it's been at the Icky Nickel.
Uh-huh.
Crazy name, but it's a nice outdoor venue.
Right.
But just outside of Sioux City, out in the countryside. So we've been doing that since 2010. And now, I mean, it seems like some bigger players have been interested. You know, Kenny's come back.
Right.
Joe Vitale's come back.
Yep.
Chris Duarte. God, who else? Eddie Turner,
yeah.
I'm talking to David Gibbons about coming.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe we can get Reggie and talk him into coming to one of the fests. I know he's busy, but...
You guys have so much influence, I don't see why not. You know? It's just like you said, a matter of getting everybody together, right? Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. So I just, want to just continue carrying on, keeping Tommy's spirit and music alive with some great players.
Exactly.
I mean, there's so many, or too many to mention.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, man, Bobby, you're a great drummer, man, and we need guys like you to keep on going, keep the genre alive, both rock and jazz, and, you know.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate your kind words, and, you know, I just bash out anymore. You know, I told you, you know, my background, and that's my style, but... You know, I just try to keep it simple, solid, and try and keep it in the pocket. But
sure.
I just bash out anymore.
Mm-hmm. How about filling in for Ringo with the Beatles? How would that work out?
Well, I would love to meet Ringo.
Yeah.
And well, you never know.
You never know.
If I got a chance to play along with the All-Stars there, I would...
Wouldn't that be cool?
Be in seventh heaven.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, in the latter days here, speaking of the groove,
uh-huh.
I mean, I didn't appreciate it so much back when I was a upstart, and if more was better, and, you know, try and play as many licks as you can. But in the latter years, the groove and Ringo,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Watts, and their feel, it's just that simple groove in the pocket.
Yeah.
I really respect it.
Like you said, it's simple. It really is, but it works. Yeah. But there'll never be another Buddy Rich.
Yeah, that's a whole different ball game. Yeah.
Bobby, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I really, really appreciate it. Keep in touch. You know, we want to get you on again. Let us know what you're up to in the coming months and you know, what you got planned and everything.
Okay, will do. And
hope you can come out to Florida.
Take some time and get into some of the interviews you've done here.
Yeah, it's been a bunch.
I'm gonna get busy and listen. But hey, it was great talking to you, Ray.
Good talking to you too, man. And all the best to you and the family. And hope you get to come out to Florida one day.
Oh, speaking of family, I mean a lot of what keeps me together now is my gal Betty.
Right.
Betty B. And she keeps me together and.
Well, behind every great man's a great woman. That's the truth.
Well, she's great.
Yeah.
But anyway, you have a great weekend, and it's been great talking to you.
Me too, Bobby. Thank you so much, man.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good one.
You too.
Talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye.
For more information about Bobby Berge, visit www.rampantzone.com/Bobby-Berge, B-E-R-G-E. Also, www.facebook.com/Bobby.Berge and the number one on Facebook. Also, www.TommyBoland.com and www.Zephyr, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, official.com. Very, very special thanks to the great Trace Keane for arranging this interview with Bobby Berge and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. And of course, if you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. And it is real news, guys. And of course, purchase my new book. It's awesome. I do want to say it is awesome. It's entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Volume 1. I hope to get at least 4 out of these, out of the series. Chronicles Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free. You can order yours today on hardcover, which I suggest, or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com. Features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. Now, I want to mention who's in the book. These are all interviews by me. Some of them have passed on, so they will not be doing interviews anymore. This is very historical. Chris Squire, of course, from Yes, great bass player from Yes. Dr. John, Greg Lake from Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Henry McCullough, Joe Cocker's band, Jack Bruce, of course, from Cream, Joe Lala, Johnny Winter, Keith Emerson, Paul Kattner, Jefferson Airplane and Starship, Jefferson Starship, Ray Thomas, of course, from the Moody Blues, Ronnie Montrose, Tony Joe White, David Clayton Thomas, Mike Love from the Beach Boys, Tommy Rowe, Barry Hay from Golden Earring, Chris Thompson, Manfred Mann, Jesse Colin Young, John Kay from Steppenwolf, Julian Lennon, Mark Lindsay, Mickey Dolenz, Peter Rivera from Rare Earth, Tommy James from the Shondells, Todd Rundgren, Dave Mason, Edgar Winter, Frank Marino from Mahogany Rush, Greg Raleigh from Santana, Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull, Jim Dandy Mangrum, John Anderson, Lou Graham, Mick Box, Randy Bachman, Robin Trower, Roger Fisher, Steve Hackett, Annie Haslam, Melanie Safka, Petula Clark, Susie Quattro, Colin Blundstone, Dave Davies, Jim McCarty of the Yardbirds, and of course, Pete Best, original drummer from the Beatles. This is a good, great book, and everybody should add this to their collection. Okay, thank you guys for another episode, and have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.